Welcome to the Food Revolution Summit, where we explore how you can heal your body and your world with food. This is Ocean Robbins, and I am joined by my dad and colleague John Robbins in welcoming our guest, Mike Adams. Mike Adams, also known as the Health Ranger, is a passionate and persuasive advocate for personal and planetary wellness, whole foods nutrition, and health freedom. Mike is the founder and editor-in-chief for naturalnews.com, which reaches more than 5 million users every month, and which is one of the 2,000 most popular websites in the world. Mike makes his thousands of articles and special reports available for no charge. His free online newsletter, the Natural News Insider News Alert, has an active subscriber base of 365,000 and is sent out 5 days a week. Natural News Network also offers online radio and television channels, which provide hours of listening and viewing resources for the latest in natural health. As if that wasn't enough, Mike is also the founder of the nonprofit ConsumerWellness.org, which focuses on empowering individuals by teaching how to achieve whole foods nutrition and natural healing. So now, Mike, my dad and I are so excited to have this time with you and to welcome you onto this call. And here to interview you is my dad, John Robbins.
Thank you, Ocean. And Mike, I join all of our listeners in welcoming you to the Food Revolution Summit and thanking you for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us. Like millions of other Americans, I've read your writing. I have been moved continually by your passion and your commitment. One of the most provocative things I hear you saying repeatedly is that poor nutrition can destroy any nation, but that good nutrition could save us. I hear you issuing a clear warning. If we don't make immediate and radical changes in the food supply, in how we produce our food, how it's marketed to consumers, we won't survive as a nation, because we'll be brought down by the inevitable consequences of becoming a nutritionally deficient, chronically diseased people. Can you explain to our listeners why you feel so strongly about this?
Yeah, sure. And thanks for the question, and thanks for welcoming me or asking me to participate in your summit. If you look throughout human history, this has happened before, where ignorance of nutrition has brought down civilizations. And I think perhaps the most relevant example might be Rome, where actual lead poisoning through the water aqueducts that fed water into the city. Historically, it looks like that has contributed strongly to the growing insanity of the culture there, of the population, including the leaders, the decision makers, the Senate, which led to its downfall. It wasn't the only cause, but it was a contributing factor. And if you look at that, and you look at other cases where, for example, civilizations, if you look at Papua New Guinea, the sustainability of that nation is based on everyday agriculture and staying close to the earth and producing food and having that knowledge and that skill and not turning it over to GMOs and synthetic chemicals and all these other things. So there are many, many examples. I won't go into them. But if you look at America today, it is very clear that America is in decline, economically, scientifically, technologically, even perhaps spiritually as well. It's in decline. And if you start to look at the underlying reasons behind that decline, inevitably you have to get down to nutrition, because the behavior of the people in a population is based on their mental health. Their mental health is based on their nutritional health, because the brain is fed by the blood, and the blood is made of what you eat. So what you eat becomes what you think. What you think becomes what you do, and what you do determines the direction of the nation and the culture. So as we have got away from real food, real seeds, living closer to the earth, plant nutrition, as we've gotten away from that and moved into synthetics, which are detached from nature and detached from who we really are, then we have also lost our way in terms of the entire nation. So the cost of this is what we're seeing in healthcare costs. Healthcare costs are out of control. So in summary, if we get back to food, we can restore the mental health, the cultural health, and the physical health that can keep our nation strong and moving into the future. If we get away from real food, we're going to suffer from disease and madness, and that's what we're seeing today.
When you mentioned Rome and lead poisoning, I thought of a landmark study that was published in the AMA Journal that concluded that lead poisoning childhood is the single most important predictor of criminality among adults, far exceeding poverty, the absence of a father in the household, and the other major social factors that are commonly cited by criminologists.
Yes.
It was Dr. Herbert Needleman and his colleagues at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine who published the report and did the study. And they found that even nominal doses of lead, well below those associated with poisoning, can lead to antisocial behavior and to delinquency in young kids. The question I have for you is, if exposure to even minute amounts of lead can disturb children's brain chemistry and behavior so dramatically, is it possible that other forms of chemical pollution, including artificial food additives and genetically altered foods, might be wreaking havoc in ways we don't understand?
Absolutely, and I believe they are. I believe that is a big part of what we're seeing. When it comes to metals, remember, we had leaded gasoline in this nation for many, many decades. And lead, in fact, when it was first really introduced back in the, 1930s, 40s, and 50s, it really went ramped up in fuels and paints and other industrial products. It was marketed as the miracle solution. Lead was great. Lead had a million uses. And we see this now with mercury over the last several decades. Mercury is wonderful in your teeth. It's malleable. Mercury is great for vaccines. It preserves them and keeps them safe. And there was even a study cited that said the mercury in the vaccines makes the vaccines work better and gives better results for children. So you see this incredible history of metals that we know are neurological toxins being marketed and promoted by the chemical complex as the solutions to our health problems, even our economic problems in the case of lead with gasoline. So beyond metals, as you mentioned there, John, GMOs are a major unknown. We are living the experiment. There has not been adequate testing done. There has not been enough time to determine what will happen with genetic pollution and unanticipated replication of genetically engineered crops in the wild. There has not been enough tests done on the long-term effects of human consumption of BT corn, for example. What about infertility? What about organ failure? What about cancer tumors that have been found in the mice studies? So we are living a grand experiment, and it's an insane experiment. And I think, like you and like most of your listeners here, I would like to say, let's stop experimenting on humanity. Let's get back to what we know is good and what we know we can trust, which is real seeds, real food, healthy soils, not spraying Roundup on everything. If they're going to experiment with GMOs, they should do it in a level 4 biohazard facility where it can't escape. Don't make the general population inject their kids with aluminum and MSG and mercury, which the CDC admits is still in vaccines. So that's the message, is let's get back to some sanity here and stop the poisoning.
I think we need to get back to sanity in so many ways. The USDA currently is in charge of nutritional education in this country. But the Department of Agriculture has a dual mandate, as well as providing the nutritional education materials that are used in the schools and creating the nutritional guidelines that pretty well govern nutrition and how it's taught in the country. The other mandate is to promote the sale of U.S. agricultural products. So as a result, the USDA wants Americans to eat more of everything, more dairy and more meat particularly, really, but really more of everything.
Right.
Now, our ancient ancestors lived in a different world, and for them it was a struggle to get enough calories to survive. Meat was a feast food. Sugar was a luxury. Fat was a treasure. Now, instead of struggling to get enough calories, as was historically the case, we're struggling under the weight of too many. Yet it seems that the USDA policy comes down to eat more. What are the consequences to us individually and as a society when we're constantly encouraged to eat more of what often are highly toxic, disease-promoting foods, many of them now genetically engineered, that make up most of the American diet today?
Well, we're seeing the front edge of what I think is a tidal wave of chronic disease and infertility. And the USDA has, of course, sold out to big ag, agricultural giants, food giants, in the same way that other regulatory agencies inevitably sell out, or you might say sort of get in bed with, the industries that they are supposed to regulate. For example, the FDA is classic. The FDA is really in bed with the drug companies rather than being a citizen advocate to protect us against the drug companies. The FDA is pro-GMO experiment out in the open. The USDA wants, like you said, wants us all to eat more of everything, oblivious to the fact that we are drowning in empty calories, nutritionally depleted calories. So the USDA also does not distinguish, by the way, if you look at the food guide pyramid, it does not distinguish between living foods and dead foods. According to the USDA, canned green beans that have been pasteurized and cooked are nutritionally equivalent to fresh raw green beans that you pick out of your garden. Now, all of us who know anything about health realize that's nonsense. There is a qualitative difference, perhaps even a bioenergetic difference between these two, and certainly even a nutritional difference as well. You know, the heat destroys many, many nutrients, phytonutrients. Some of the most powerful disease-preventing nutrients, for example, sulforaphane in broccoli, is destroyed by heat. It's destroyed by microwaving. And yet the USDA has these policies in place, for example, where raw almond growers in California cannot now legally sell raw almonds in the United States. They have to be fumigated, irradiated, or pasteurized, killing off many of the nutrients and introducing potentially new dangerous chemicals into the almonds that should be available to be sold raw and fresh and healthy. So the consequences, to get to your question, are that we're going to continue to see in America a rapid acceleration of chronic degenerative disease, cancer, heart disease, diabetes, and kidney disorders, also a big one, and vastly increased healthcare costs because we're continuing to have to pay to treat the symptoms of disease caused by nutritional deficiencies and consumption of synthetic chemicals in the food supply. And we're going to see a massive reduction in the longevity and the productivity of American citizens. So we have people costing more money in disease treatment, living shorter lives where they can't contribute to the economy for as long, and being less healthy and less mentally stable during this entire time. You know, we've got children that are practically born with diabetes now. Children born with diseases or given them very quickly, such as autism, which is often given to children by these chemicals and metals. And the USDA pretends that it's somehow defending America, but it's not. It's dooming America, in my opinion. And like we said with the first question, if we don't change this, John, we're going to see the downfall of this nation as a side effect of poor health, poor nutrition, and just completely bizarre agricultural policies. That's where I think it's headed. And I don't want to sound like a pessimist. I think we could change this around, and I hope we could talk about some solutions. And I think what you're doing is a big part of that solution. The solutions are out there. They're right in your backyard, actually. So I hope we can get to those, too.
We will. And I just want to say, you mentioned diabetes and in children increasing, which of course it is, and this is a very big problem. And it's really sad to see our kids battled with a chronic illness that in almost every case could have been prevented, particularly with type 2 diabetes. And I know that fairly early in your own life, somewhere around the age of 30, you yourself were diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. Is that correct?
By the age of 30, I was in very poor health. I was hypoglycemic, and I was borderline type 2 diabetic. I had the blood glucose test, and they said, you're right on the border. I had a lot of chronic pain. I was very, very overweight, and a lot of issues, perhaps even some kidney malfunction at that time. But that's what woke me up and got me into studying foods and nutrition and ultimately sharing that information with others. And I think a lot of people who are listening to this, they have probably had their own personal health crisis that woke them up. It seems to be the most common story I hear among people. And sometimes we have to learn from our mistakes before we make the right choice. On a larger scale, though, for humanity, we can't afford to make this mistake on a global scale. We may not have a second chance. So we need to learn now and move in the right direction.
Did you come to the conclusion in your healing journey that your own illnesses and really the vast majority of diseases that afflict us today could be prevented and in some cases even cured without drugs, without surgery, by a return to natural living and a natural diet?
Absolutely. Almost 100% of the known diseases today, with the exceptions being things like genetic disorders that you're born with, but even those obviously are influenced by diet of the mother. But almost 100% of the chronic diseases that we see today can be easily prevented with nutrition and often reversed with nutrition. Not always, but often. It depends on how far they've progressed and, for example, whether if a cancer patient has had chemotherapy, the chemo causes usually kidney damage, liver damage, heart damage, and so on, and causes more cancer. So sometimes a person has gone very far down that road of drugs and surgery, and it's very difficult at that point to reverse it. But in early stages of most diseases, including cancer, I believe, based on my research, that they are very easy to turn around nutrition, that most people alive today in the Western world are living in chronic states of nutritional deficiency. Probably 95% of the population right now is wildly deficient in vitamin D. And vitamin D, as you know, prevents, according to the studies, 78% of all cancers of all types, colorectal, breast, prostate, you name it, even skin cancer. So if you look at the deficiencies and what we're eating, I mean, look, I live on a farm. And I have animals out here. I have goats. I've got chickens. I've got a couple of donkeys. And it looks like we just adopted a little baby rabbit that we found. But these animals all need minerals. We supplement the minerals to the animals to keep them healthy and keep them alive. And every cattle rancher knows that in America. Every horse owner knows that. You feed your animals minerals, they stay healthy. Well, then humans, what do? We feed people minerally deficient foods. The sugar has the minerals stripped out. The bread has the minerals stripped out. You know, the wheat, the corn, everything that's refined and processed lacks the minerals, and so we become diseased. It's not rocket science. And it's not just minerals, but if we at least had a mineral nutritional base, a foundation of good nutrition, which could be as simple as growing sprouts in some salt water, then we could prevent nearly all cases of chronic disease that we see ravaging our nation right now. That's my view, John.
Well, I agree with you, and I know many of our listeners do too, Mike. When you mentioned the animals that you have around there in your farm, I know you agree with me that our practice of raising animals in confined environments, factory farming, is atrociously cruel, and that subjecting them to completely unnatural diets and killing them in inhumane ways in order to harvest their flesh and turn a profit is an outrageous form of cruelty to animals. Factory farms are filled with animal misery. The question I have for you is, are they also causes of disease in humans? Are people who eating the products of factory farms inviting illness into their lives?
I think so, absolutely. First of all, if you look at what factory farms feed their animals, a lot of that is genetically modified food. So you're getting the GMOs into the tissues of the animals, and we're not sure yet exactly what that could cause. It's another experiment. But there could be, for example, some cross-genetic replication in the gut bacteria of the animal that eats, let's say, a genetically modified corn. There could be some transgenic effects that end up producing a toxin inside the gut of the animal, thereby weakening the animal and poisoning the meat that we get from that animal. So we could be getting sort of a secondhand replicated poison. I'm not saying that that's happening. I'm just saying that we don't know it's not happening. And just on that level, shouldn't we be more cautious? So we've got to look through the entire food chain. When you buy something at the grocery store, you are, in effect, setting off a domino effect of everywhere that food came from, the factory farm, the GMO cornfield that fed the factory farm, the poison pesticides that were put on the GMO cornfield that fed the factory farm, the shareholders who own stock in the company that produces the poison on the cornfield in the GMO farm. You see, it is a chain. And if we are going to be responsible human beings, we need to be aware of what chains of action that we are initiating. So if you buy local, if you grow your own, if you buy from a co-op, if you buy organic, you are initiating chains of action that are positive rather than destructive.
Yep. And we have perverse food subsidies in the Farm Bill. We have so many ways that people are being pushed against their best interests, against our greater good. For example, Now gummy candies with artificial apple flavoring are actually cheaper than apples. What if we were to tax junk food and use the revenue to lower the price to the consumer of things like fresh vegetables and fresh fruits and other healthy foods? And we could also perhaps use the income stream to fund public service announcements teaching consumers about healthy nutrition. Do you think ideas like this could take us in the right direction?
Well, I wholeheartedly agree with public service announcements because I think education is the answer. I'm skeptical that a tax would go to the right place. If we could trust those who are managing the incoming tax revenues, then yeah. But, for example, if you look at the big tobacco settlements, most of the tobacco money, like 90-plus percent, never went to tobacco prevention programs. So what we see is whenever there's a new tax levied, people in Washington find a new way to misuse it instead of putting it in its intended direction. But if we could actually make it work and trust them to make it work, then yeah, a tax on processed foods to pay for public service announcements for healthy foods, I would be all for it. But as it stands today, I can't trust Washington. So I'm not sure that that would work, although I love the idea. But I agree with you. The education is the answer. We have to stop having our children see advertisements where soda is super cool. You know, if you drink a diet soda, you're going to be popular and sexy and thin. No, you're not. You're going to be probably inundated with aspartame. That's not a good thing, and it's not sexy.
Well, we now have lung cancer warnings on cigarette packages. What do you think would happen if hamburgers carried warning labels informing people that this product was made from animals who are subjected to torture and that eating it will lead to heart disease and contribute to global warming? And what if bottles of soda pop or boxes of sugary cereals had to carry prominent labels that warn people that the product contains ingredients that promote obesity and diabetes?
I am all for very strong government regulation on the issue of labeling, because I'm a big advocate of full disclosure, and this is why I supported GMO labeling. You probably know I'm not a huge fan of government intervention in lots of other areas, but on this one, this is where government needs to be strong and even aggressive. Right now, food labeling is intended to mislead people. I remember seeing a package of, I think, Nestle Quick strawberry milk, and the claim on the front was, it helps build strong bones. But somebody selling a broccoli would never be allowed to make the claim that broccoli helps build strong bones, because the junk food companies are allowed to make the claims, while the real food companies, the growers, are never allowed to make claims. And then all the synthetic chemicals and everything that are in the processed foods are hidden in there. In fact, some of them aren't even required to be on the labels. If you buy, for example, fruit powders, even some superfruit powders like acai or pomegranate, you may not even know, or your listeners may not know, that there can be maltodextrin from genetically modified sources in the powder that does not legally have to be listed on the label. And that's absurd. So I think labels should tell the truth about GMOs. I think they should tell the truth about country of origin also, because I think organic standards are in many ways a hoax in China, and I know some of that firsthand. I also think that these warnings, like you just suggested, about correlations between certain types of foods and certain types of disease, I think those should be on foods and even sodas. I think that's a great idea, and I would be all in favor of that if we could ever make that happen, get past the resistance of the very wealthy food industry.
You mentioned organic foods. I'm sure you're aware of a recent Stanford study that implied that organic foods aren't worth the extra cost, or certainly that's how the media construed the study. There are people who believe that the marketing of healthy foods can blur into elitism with all the expense and culinary affectation that implies. But others, including myself, feel that the added expense of buying organic foods is an investment in health. We think it makes good sense to, as much as possible, avoid ingesting the pesticides, hormones, antibiotics, synthetic preservatives, artificial dyes and sweeteners, and other harmful inputs that are used in conventional farming and food production. Do you think people who buy organic food are sane and sensible, or do you think they're being exploited and tricked to wasting their money?
Well, let me be very clear on this. The entire smear campaign against organics was organized with talking points, and it was a collaboration effort to try to attack organics before organics just completely took over all the grocery stores, because when you get down to it, sane people, informed people, all of them, almost without exception, want to eat clean food. They don't want to consume poison residues. They don't want to consume GMOs if they have a choice. They want clean, organic, you know, not sprayed with chemicals, food. So the desire to eat organic and buy organic is the most sane thing. It is who we are. It's the way all food was on this planet before the era of synthetic chemicals came upon us. Organic food is real food. Non-organic food is the aberration. It is the bizarre deviation. In fact, there should be a campaign out there to go after conventional foods and, like you said, label them as potentially toxic on the food labels. Warning, this cereal may have residues of the following pesticide, 2,4-D, linked to Parkinson's disease, and so on and so forth. Just go down the list. Put it on the box.
So right now, conventionally grown foods, that is to say foods grown with poison, aren't labeled such, whereas an organic grower has to pay to get certification so that they can put the label organic on their product. What if we reversed it so that the foods that were not organic had to say so and had to list the pesticides that were used in growing the food and had to list the herbicides and the weed killers and the insecticides and had to mention what is known about the ones that are carcinogenic, the ones that produce birth defects, the ones that are known to be neurotoxins, and that information was given to people, because right now it's basically concealed. The norm has become food grown with poison.
Yeah, absolutely. Realize that the food industry, its profit model is based on keeping people ignorant. They want to keep consumers in the dark. Look at GMOs. GMOs only have financial success or economic success because people buy them accidentally. It is the one product that's out there. In almost the entire sales base of GMOs is based on people unknowingly, accidentally buying it. And I can't think of hardly any other product out there that people accidentally buy over and over and over again. But GMOs fall into that category, and perhaps pesticides do as well. The food industry wants us to remain incredibly ignorant. In fact, they are focused on anti-education. They want us to think that their processed foods are healthy and can prevent disease, while sort of under the table attacking the organic foods that are nutritionally superior. So this is how we get this completely distorted landscape of consumer ignorance and a willful see no evil mainstream media. They all want to pretend that these poison-laced foods are perfect. They want to label them natural. You know, natural is very deceptive. Most people think that means non-GMO, but of course it doesn't. And at the same time, then the media wants to attack organics and say, oh, you people are crazy for buying food that doesn't have poison on it. But if you really lay it out, it's insane. That argument is insane.
It really is. And what steps can our listeners take to create health for themselves and their children and our society in the midst of so much lunacy, in the midst of the landscape you've just described?
First of all, I always encourage people to grow as much food as you can. Grow it yourself. Use heirloom seeds. Use trace mineral supplements for your plants so that they have good minerals. If you grow just, let's say, in a summer, you grow some okra and some tomatoes, and that's it. You just grow two things, and you feed minerals to your soil, you're going to get more nutrition out of the okra and the tomatoes in one summer than you would get eating processed food all year long, bought from a grocery store. So if you grow it, you can actually nourish it. And you need to think about growing your own food not as just, oh, I'm having a home garden, not that there's anything wrong with that, but you need to think about it as, is first I'm going to put the nutrients into the soil and I'm going to let the plants transmute the soil minerals into bioavailable plant minerals, and then I'm going to eat that, and that's going to become part of me. And that's the cycle that we need to get back to. Now, for those who don't have the time to garden, and I understand many people don't have the time or the actual land space to do it, the next best thing is to support your local farmers. CSAs, food co-ops, farmers markets on the weekend. Get to know them. Ask them questions about what they use. If they're claiming chemical-free, what do they use? How do they keep the bugs off? Is it neem oil? Is it cayenne pepper? Is it tobacco juice? What is it? Find out what it is. Get to know them. Get to know your food. We've got to become interested in what we eat. Instead of having it be just a side thought, oh, I have something important to do, and on the way we're going to drive through fast food and eat a burger. If it's a side thought, if it's just a distraction to your life, you're never going to be healthy. You got to make food a priority.
Well, one of the many things I appreciate about you and your work, Mike, is your unrelenting passion to share natural health wisdom and secrets with the world. I think if you had your way, we'd see a golden age of health and healing that would uplift each and every one of us, and indeed our civilization itself. I know our listeners join me in thanking you for your work, your dedication, for being with us, and for your commitment and contribution to the health of each and every one of us and our world. We thank you, Mike.
Well, thank you, John, for the invitation and for your work, which pioneered this whole realm in so many ways. People like me are just sort of continuing the tradition of activism and information, public education. The bottom line, if we continue this kind of effort, John and Ocean, we can win this. We're going to win on GMOs. We're going to win. The people are going to win. The corporations are going to see their monopoly crumble, and we're going to restore that issue to the people, which is where it belongs, people's choice and freedom to choose based on accurate information. So we're going to win that, and then we'll keep winning more. How's that sound?
It sounds
great. Martin Luther King Jr. said, "The arc of the moral universe is long, but I believe it bends towards justice." So
yeah.
May it be so, and to get working together, we can bend it together, too. We've been talking
Absolutely.
With Mike Adams of naturalnews.com and consumerwellness.org. And Mike, we want to thank you again for your passionate dedication to the real sources of health and for doing so much to spread knowledge and insight. It's been an honor to speak with you and to share your message with our listeners.
Thank you both. Take care.
This concludes our interview, but our work is just getting started. If you feel excited by what you just heard and you want to share it with other people in your life, if you want access to 23 more amazing interviews, then we have an offer to share. We'd like to invite you to get a download and a transcript of the entire Food Revolution Summit, all 12 hours of interviews, plus a huge collection of bonus resources. You can get this entire package and own it for the rest of your life for very special offers between now and the end of the summit. If you want more information, please go to foodrevolution.org/empowerment. That's foodrevolution.org/empowerment. Thank you again for joining us. Have a blessed and beautiful day.
And now, we bring you a special bonus recorded message. Over the years, my dad and I have had the privilege of hearing from many thousands of people whose lives have been transformed by the food revolution. Some of these people have lost extra weight or gained more energy, while others have reversed or even cured life-threatening illnesses like cancer, diabetes, or heart disease. Some of the stories of transformation are so touching and so inspiring that it seems like they just need to be told. One of those stories comes from Susan Wynick. I caught up with Susan a few days ago, and this is what she wanted to share with you.
Hi, my name is Susan, and my food revolution began just about 3 years ago. It was the spring of 2010 when I had learned of my diagnosis of diabetes, and that was now going to be added to already medicating every day for hypertension. I was 380 pounds, quite depressed and still hoping for change. And I finally reached up on my bookshelf where I had been keeping a book called Eat to Live, written by Dr. Joel Fuhrman, that had been given to me a few years prior to that. And it just was a part of my collection of books for, you know, changing my health that I had thought I would do throughout the years, but I apparently didn't do. But it was with that diagnosis of diabetes that I really scared me. I had lost my father at a very young age. He was a non-compliant type 2 diabetic, and I just saw that that was going to be me. And I have 4 children. I wasn't ready to say goodbye to them. So I opened the book, and I read, and I started to intuitively know that this was the right thing for me. I was never going to be a person that could take medication for this disease that I want to say would be food addiction. And I just went to my grocery store and went to the produce department and started to shop. And I took one day at a time to try and make a change in my life. And it has now been, it will be 3 years this August, because I started August 1st of 2010, and I will have lost over 220 pounds. I do not have diabetes. I do not have hypertension. I am not on any medication for either thing, and I exercise regularly. I maintain an excellent nutritarian lifestyle every day. I try to encourage everyone around me to live this way. I'm trying to be a good example to my kids and to my husband and to all the people that I love. And it has literally saved my life. It's changed my life. My energy is completely, I never would recognize this person if I had seen her. I would never, ever have believed that the 380-pound woman that I was, that could barely put one foot in front of the other and walk up a flight of stairs, could now run up many flights of stairs and go hiking and cycling and have boundless energy. And it is from this food. It is from this wonderful, wonderful food that I eat. I have G-bombs every day, and those are greens, beans, onions, mushrooms, seeds, berries, every day. I have learned to be very prepared. That is the key for me, is to be prepared. And even when we go on vacation, I bring my green bag that I got many years ago from Dr. Fuhrman's office, and I make sure that I'm always prepared. I'm prepared for everything. And when we do go on vacation, I find the local farmer's market or greengrocer so that I can continue to eat in my healthy way, because why would you want to go backwards when you've had such good health and such good results? And I know that I look younger than my years, and I feel better. I can't say enough about this program. It's really not hard to maintain this lifestyle, but it's also opened my eyes to the need to pay attention to our environment, because now that my diet has become so based on where is my food supply coming from? I am very aware of the food supply, and I'm very concerned globally about our environment. And so it's not just about me anymore. It's about this whole planet that we live on and where our food is coming from and how it's not just about their health anymore. It's about the whole planet's health. The principles of the food revolution have definitely changed my life, and I encourage people to try and adopt this way of living and eating and thinking, because it will change your life as well.
This segment is now complete. Our next interview will start at the top of the hour. Teleconference and Skype callers can stay on the line or hang up and call back then. If you're listening on the internet, please go to foodrevolution.org/calendar and click on the name of our next speaker to find the player controls. This interview will be available on a replay starting on the hour for the next 23 hours. Or you can get it in CD or digital form, along with transcripts, at foodrevolution.org/empowerment. Thank you so much for joining us.